if we can improve the water quality so they drink more, their dry matter intake is better. It enhances. We know we're going to have a drop in dry matter around calving. But if we have a very functional rumen with good water going through it, we're going to have better appetites and we're going to have less feed drops. Mm-hmm. And we see that as a basically an improvement in the overall health of the animals.
A whole new era of communication in the dairy industry is coming. Now you have the brightest minds of the global dairy industry right in your pocket. And what's best? You can listen to all of them while driving to a farm, traveling, or running errands. It's never been this good, and it's never been this simple.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Asepsis, an ounce of prevention. Diamond V, because animal health deserves a healthier approach. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Exalit, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Volac, unlocking ruminant potential through nutritional solutions for a sustainable future. Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition, your partner for extra animal performance.
Welcome to the Dairy Podcast Show, a weekly podcast where you'll find cutting-edge insights and everything that's working in the global dairy industry.
All right. Well, welcome everybody to this episode of the Dairy Podcast Show. I'm your host for today, Gail Carpenter. I'm the State Dairy Extension Specialist at Iowa State University. I'm joined today by Dr. David Reed. He's a veterinarian in Hazel Green, Wisconsin. And we were talking before we started recording. We're both wildcats, so both spent some time down at Kansas State, down in Manhattan. A little bit removed in terms of time, though. And Dr. Reed, you were saying that you finished your bachelor's degree in 2 years, so total of 6 years at K-State to get a bachelor's and a DVM. Is that right?
Well, it kind of was that way. So 6 years total. So I get in after 2 years to veterinary school. And at the end of the first 2 years of vet school, Kansas State awarded me a BS in biological sciences. So it was a great deal. That made me in-state tuition then because I was a grad student. And I was working in a dorm at the time. So I ended up staying in the dorm the whole time just because it was financially the only way I could get through vet school. So, yeah. Spent a lot of time in the Little Apple, Little Apple.
Yes. Man happiness. Yeah. So you're from Rhode Island. Were you just confused? You thought you were going to Manhattan, New York? Or how did you end up in Manhattan, Kansas?
No. I actually wrote letters when I was in the seventh grade. My mom helped me and I wrote letters to, there were 14 vet schools in North America then, or in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I got letters back from everybody, but I got a little note back, a personal kind of a thing from K-State. And when I was a freshman, I rewrote letters, my mom again helping me. And a recruiter called the house and talked to my parents and me both and said, you know, if you come to K-State, you have a much better chance of getting into veterinary school because you did your pre-vet here. Mm. They know the classes. And the other thing, it was cheaper than going to the University of Rhode Island, paying out-of-state tuition at K-State.
It's still that way for a lot of states, yeah.
I'd never been farther west than Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. So one day I got an airplane, which I'd never been on before, and ended up in Kansas City and ended up in Manhattan, Kansas. So.
Oh, wow.
And I started out to be small animal, but two professors took me under the wing my freshman year of vet school and decided they were going to turn me into a beef or dairy guy, and it kind of worked.
The rest is history. Yeah. Yeah.
The rest is history.
So after you finished vet school, did you spend time in practice? I know you're an independent consultant right now. What was your path to get to Southwest Wisconsin?
So I looked all over for you know, opportunities, came to Southwest Wisconsin. Two other veterinarians joined that practice, became a partner. And I was in the practice for 15 years. Most of the practice, most of what I did and one of my partners was about 90% dairy. We started developing, I did milk quality kind of stuff. He was a board certified thuriogenologist without going to grad school. Hmm. And one of my other partners that came in a little later was doing quite a bit of nutrition work. So we were trying to specialize, and it was almost completely dairy for what, man, once in a while on a weekend, I had to look at a dog, but other than that, it was basically dairy. And it expanded the consulting on my end from the milk quality really expanded. And after 15 years, I left the practice and started an independent kind of a consulting practice in milk quality, which several of my friends told me that university people said, oh, no one's ever done that. It won't work. And I always said, well, if it doesn't, I'll go back to being a real vet. But now I wouldn't go back to being a real vet. You probably wouldn't hire me anymore, even the local practice here. But so that's kind of my history. And then in the middle of that, after about 15 years of independent consulting, I actually went to work for Bomatic for about 8.5 years. So I did a lot of stuff with training, which I really enjoyed. And then quite a bit of product development stuff. So some of the new claws and pulsator that came out of Bomatic, I did a lot of the field work and training with that. And so in 2011, I went back to being an independent rather than working at a company. So
Yeah. Be your own boss. Yeah.
Yep.
A sepsis, an ounce of prevention. A sepsis LLC is a Wisconsin-based animal wellness company focused on the development of state-of-the-art animal hygiene technologies. Our company's mission is to apply innovative hygiene solutions into animal agricultural and veterinary applications, improving the wellness of the animals with a focus on sustainability. We accomplish this through the continued enhancement of our chlorine dioxide-based technologies within a wide range of agricultural hygiene applications, from facility and animal hygiene to water treatment.
So one of the things when we were chatting beforehand that you said you were interested in talking about was water quality. So how did you end up getting interested between milk quality and water quality? What kind of drug you along?
So the whole thing is, you know, if you have really healthy cows, you're going to have less mastitis, mm-hmm. given any level of sanitation or milk equipment performance or anything. And so one of the things we were always looking at and I hesitate some days to tell some of my clients that most of what I know about milking cows, I learned in 30 to 60 cow Tystall barns in Southwest Wisconsin. But one of the things we were doing was if we had these water bowls with small diameter hoses and rusty pipes. And so we would change some of those out to 2-inch water lines around the barn, put a 3/4 hose to the drinker, and then start cleaning the drinkers every day. Mm. And the dairies we did that on went up in milk, usually 2 to 3 pounds of milk per cow per day. So I got into this saying, hey, you know, this is a big part of the overall nutrition. And more importantly, it's really an important part of a really healthy rumen, which means you have a more healthy immune system, which is going to help in, well, mastitis control or milk quality, all of the areas that we deal with as, you know, production dairy veterinarians. That's all we see is those kinds of things. So.
Yeah. No, I think that when we talk about water, when I teach class and I start talking about water, usually I say, water is one of the most overlooked nutrients, I think, that we tend to think about. But I've also heard a lot of people say that. I had Dave Beattie as my ruminant nutrition professor when I was an undergrad. So I've heard the water.
So you've heard the water story from the source.
but then it's crazy how quickly we forget how important water quality is, even when we've heard it, even when we've had people like you preaching about it. It's one of those things that it's so easy just to overlook, right?
Right. So one of the things we did too is an efficiency thing from an electrical point of view that, you know, if you look at the typical dairy in Southwest Wisconsin, your cooling of milk is one of the biggest users of electricity. Mm. So we were advocating putting in, even in our Tystall barns, we put in small, coolers. So we'd use well water and then you discharge the warm well water. Mm. Well, then we decided that I had a couple of clients that we would go to local dealers and find flip top 500 to 600 gallon bulk tanks. We'd set them outside of the barn, run that water in there. And when you turn the cows out, most of those guys were turning cows out after morning chores. You couldn't believe how those cows would go to that warm water. So like, oh, this isn't a thing too. And so when you think about this is what's the temperature that water cows are drinking? That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it also comes down to how clean that water is. And mm-hmm. irregardless of whether it's in one of those kinds of tanks or whether it's a typical water source that you would see on a dairy, cleanliness is the thing that really drives quality.
So when you go to a farm that you think might be having some water issues, what are some of the big things that you notice? So you mentioned temperature, you mentioned cleanliness. Is availability one that you're seeing a lot too?
Absolutely. You know, so that you see areas sometimes in particular as some of our dairies expanded here, where using existing facilities, you would share a water tank. Well, we found out pretty quickly that you need to have at least 2 water sources in every pen, mm-hmm. and better yet, depending on the size of the pen. So that, you know, we're looking at somewhere, and it's changed a little bit, but anywhere, some people, you know, some earlier BD stuff was 2.5 linear inches. Many people are shooting for 4 or 5 now per cow. And I think those are good guidelines. But I think the biggest thing is what's the cleanliness of the water? I mean, when I walk by dairies and run my hand through the bottom of a trough, and I pick it up and I call it the vet test. Will you take a smell of it? Mm-hmm. And it smells like sewerage.
Yeah.
That is not good quality water. I don't care what the water was coming in. But in so we look at how are we going to clean these tanks? What's the schedule? And then are we sure that they're functional? In other mm-hmm. words, that the floats are working properly, that they have the right amount of water in them and that sort of thing. And it's such an important thing. Most people walk by those and say, well, there's water. Don't worry.
Well, and I think especially that becomes important with your transition cows too, right? And I think we have such a hard, we have so many touch points with your lactating cows throughout the day. You're bringing them up to the parlor two, maybe even three times a day. And so you're walking by those waterers. And that's a really great starting point. I think a lot of times just say, hey, like have your pushers carry brushes with them, have your pushers make that part of their routine. But that transition cow really is a bottleneck when it comes to water availability. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So one mm-hmm. is that a lot of dairies, even today, will oftentimes have some sick cows and recently fresh cows in the same pen. And if you're not cleaning those waters every day, this is a great source of spreading all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So cleaning them is a big deal. But more importantly is, you know, you can look at the equations that have been written for water consumption. Based on, you know, the dry matter content of the feed, ambient temperature, milk production, there's a lot of things that go into them. But really, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Right.
And so what I've done, challenged dairymen to do is to clean their pre-fresh waterers every day, clean their post-fresh waterers every day, and then monitor the metabolic issues that you see in your fresh cows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always tell people that, I have a slide I show to dairymen all the time, and it says, you know, cows are incapable of lying unlike the people that own them. It's a little bit. But what happens is if we can improve the water quality so they drink more, their dry matter intake is better. It enhances. We know we're going to have a drop in dry matter around calving. But if we have a very functional rumen with good water going through it, we're going to have better appetites and we're going to have less feed drops. Mm-hmm. And we see that as a basically an improvement in the overall health of the animals. And I've challenged areas to do that. And then, you know, one guy in Florida years ago, and I went back there about a year later, and we went out and we were going to tour the dairy walking back towards the parlors. And we were way out. This is a far off cows, you know, the late lactation cows. And I look over at this water fountain, it's clean.
Yeah.
We go through the next pen, they're all clean. And I look at him and I go, so cleaning waters. And he goes, you know how much money you cost me, Reed? And I go, okay, what's the deal? He said, I have a guy 6 days a week cleaning water tanks. And I started laughing and I go, so clean water doesn't make any difference on your dairy. He looks at me and he goes, it was a big deal. He said, in fact, he said, I could probably hire a couple more people for what things have happened around our fresh and dry cows. Because when I did that, that convinced me that this water quality thing is big.
So what's your recommendation then for how often water should be getting clean? It is one of those chores that tends to not... tends to fall off the list sometimes, right?
Right. And, you know, there's other reasons too. So some producers will tell you that, you know, my lagoon system or my lagoon, if I flushed every water tank and it had 95 gallons of water in it every day, but we still have to get a routine. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that a lot of dairies have just kind of bypassed is, you know, what is the quality of the water going in there? Because mm-hmm. if we look at water samples on a lot of dairies, you're going to have some high iron in many cases, like in my part of Wisconsin, which is very typical. Mm-hmm. And if you're not putting something in there as a germicide, then you're going to have issues with both the plumbing and you're going to see more of this real brownish to greenish growth that occurs on the inside of the water. It's very hard to scrub off. If they're on a system with good treatment, you know, chlorine dioxide, we've seen peroxide, we've seen some other chemicals, chlorine a little bit, but not as much anymore. But some of these newer chemicals will help clean that water going in mm-hmm. so that we minimize the bacterial growth in the trough. And it makes it easier to clean because you don't have all that scum building up. You basically have the feed particles that the cows drop in there, and it doesn't take as much water to keep them clean. So I think if I'm advising a dairyman, it would be have your system plumbed mm-hmm. so that you can actually add a additive in there to sanitize that water.
Mm-hmm.
It will make a difference on your dairy.
Do those, I know obviously unclean water is not going to be palatable for cows and they won't drink it. I personally don't like the taste of chlorinated water or like city water, right? I really prefer the taste of well water. Has there been any work done on cow preferences for treated versus untreated water, or is it just kind of like we know that?
There's some evidence. So there was a group of dairies, and I don't know if they're still doing it, but they were doing reverse osmosis on milk, mm-hmm. basically in the Southwest.
Yep.
And so then they started feeding that water they were pulling out of the milk directly to cows, and they didn't like it very well because it was pure water. There were no minerals in it, nothing else. So they mixed it with some of their regular water. And a particular dairy comes to mind was in New Mexico years ago. So, but I think the idea that you have less, particularly some of the either chlorine dioxide products, they don't have that chlorine taste like you have with regular chlorine, but they're also very effective germicides that can help keep those water bowls and fountains and tanks clean. And that's, if you can keep the scum from growing in them, it's much easier to clean the feed material out of it because it doesn't stick to the sides and the bottom, and it's just easier. It takes less water, and it takes less effort by the people that are doing it.
So you mentioned tests and water testing, and I remember learning a fair amount about that or hearing it talked about, getting your water tested for different minerals and some of that. How often is that an issue when you're working with a producer about their water quality issues? How often is it a mineral issue versus just like, we can fix a lot of this with cleanliness?
So I think there's two sides of that. One is that you need to know what the calcium levels in that are in the water, the hardness levels, because that's going to influence your nutritionist as he's doing things with the ration. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, if you have really hard water, then there's going to be issues with the cleaning of the milk system and the cleanup of in the parlors and that. Mm-hmm. So what a lot of dairies do, they'll actually treat that water and reduce the hardness levels and any minerals that would be problematic to cleaning, and then utilize some of Beattie's guidelines, say, for instance, on what's that water quality you're putting into your cows, and do you need to take into account, mm-hmm. say, the calcium level of that in your rations.
What about heifers? We've spent a fair amount of time talking about dry cows, talking about lactating cows. We've done some work. There's been some work done here at Iowa State showing that calves really benefit from having good quality water. What about heifers? They're the other ones that we forget about a lot of times.
Yeah, exactly right. And again, you're looking at water sources that probably aren't being cleaned near as often as they should be. Mm-hmm. And they, in fact, may not be susceptible to being cleaned real easily, depending on the facility. But I would argue that the quality of water there is every bit as important, because what you're trying to do is grow those animals in an effective way for the least amount of feed expense so that you can get them into the productive phase of their careers sooner. Mm-hmm. So it absolutely makes sense. And I think the other thing is there's some... For instance, my daughter married a rancher in western North Dakota, and there's been some summers out there where a lot of ranchers had these huge outbreaks of pink eye. Mm. And, you know, one of the things is really it can be exacerbated by having poor quality water with some of these organisms living in the tanks themselves and cows getting exposed to it. So cleanliness to me is just going to help keep that aligned. Like I said before, it's going to clean water. Makes for healthier rumens, which makes for healthier cows. Pretty simple.
Yeah. Well, you convinced me. Is it how much work does it take to convince a dairy producer of this? Or have you found at this point that you have enough stories you can tell?
Well, some of them it goes right over the top of their head, and others will look at it and go, oh. But my challenge, typically on larger dairies, particularly, is like I said, it's pre-fresh and post-fresh, and then monitor what your cows are telling you off of that.
Yeah.
And see what happens. And, you know, when we look at a lot of these larger dairies are using some type of a feed monitoring program. Mm-hmm. So whatever the brand is, they're actually keeping very good track of dry matter intakes. You know, if they're weighing refusals, and if they're doing that, and you can see an increase in intake on your pre-fresh and post-fresh animals. I mean, there's been enough literature written that the average dairyman running up and down the road understands that if I can get those cows eating,
right,
I'm going to have less problems. So I look at that and go, that's the challenge, is convince them to clean those pens and then try to take that to the next level to do the whole dairy.
I managed our university dairy here for a few months, and it's really easy sometimes to be like, yeah, we're going to start doing this every day, and we're going to start being really good at it. And then, you know, other things happen. It kind of falls off the radar. How long do you need to keep that practice going before you start seeing a benefit on a lot on most dairies.
Again, I would argue it's probably more of an issue in your pre-fresh and post-fresh.
Right.
To me, once you start seeing that the slimy stuff sticking to the walls of the water sources, no matter what they are, then you've got an issue with water quality. And that's, you've got to get ahead of that. Otherwise, you're not going to get things under control the way you want.
Yeah.
We're all trying to maximize diameter intake.
And
we all hear about that. It's bunk space. It's push-ups. It's feed delivery at the right time of day for that lactating cow. You know, I have a large amount of feed early in the day or we're first returned from the parlor. So, but then it's not only dry matter, but the water quality is going to drive that dry matter intake. So to me, it's that discussion you have with dairymen about these are the things that can help you get to the next level.
Yeah. I'm thinking of some examples. You mentioned minimum of two water sources per pen, and that's going to vary depending on the size of the pen. I'm thinking of some farms that I've been on where it's very clear that cows are using one water but not the other. Are there common reasons for that? Or that's probably a super broad question, but when you see something like that, what do you start looking at?
So, you know, remember that as that cow gets about half milked out, so half the volume of her udder is evacuated, prolactin is going to kick in. And that's what's going to make her thirsty. So that animal is going to search out areas as close as possible to the parlor to drink. So what you find in a lot of barns is that if you put water meters, and I know some dairies have done this, water meters on sources that are closer to the parlor, they'll typically have more use. And the other thing that I didn't think about before this, but I knew it, but I didn't really think about it, was that if you're in a cold winter situation and you have water sources at the far end of a barn, so there's really no cow population just across over alley, say, the water temperature there is quite a bit colder than it will be where you've got more water coming out of the well closer in. They're seeing differences in intake based on that.
Huh.
The other thing to think about is plate cooler water. Can you put that plate cooler water either in the exit alleys at the far end of the alleys or in the main transfer lane on leading back out of the parlor, a long fountain, much like Monsanto did years ago for some of the BST stuff, you know, water quality and water sources at the exit of the parlors, run that plate cooler water back out into those water sources and watch what happens. Because those big lactating cows are going to want to drink a significant amount of water shortly after milking, each milking. And if you can have that water that's a little warmer, they're going to drink better.
Yeah.
I mean, we found that out years ago in our Tysol barns. So little things like that, you're not wasting that water. You're putting it right out to where it's going to help those cows maximize consumption if it's in a clean source.
I'm actually thinking right now about on our return alleys. That's where we have water source along the return alleys there coming out of our parlor. But we don't run it in the winter because it'll just freeze in the winter. So now you have me thinking about, are there ways that we could warm that water source or use a warmer water source and actually,
or put it in the tank and then pressurize the tank and send it to the regular drinkers that are in the barn itself so that you're going to be putting warmer water in there in the winter. There's ways around it. Yeah. So the other thing I think that as I see new dairies being built, one of the things I'm always talking to them about is make sure you have your water lines big enough. Especially in some of these new big cross-vent barns, that we need to have a large supply so that the cows aren't going to run those drinkers dry. Because if you watch some of those cows, if you get, you know, some of these tanks that are going to be about almost 10 feet long, you can get 6 or 7 cows there drinking, you know, from the ends and the sides. And there's always in the middle, there's a place, usually the middle or the end where the water comes in. If you see those with very little water in them, you've got a problem. So you need to be thinking about this, especially as construction's going on, to have large enough water lines. And then we monitor everything on dairies, right? More and more stuff every day. I mean, now we've got ear tags that'll tell us rumination, that'll tell us activity when she's laying down. Why don't we put water meters on each pen of cows?
Yeah.
So now we know the diameter intake and we know the water intake. And we can calculate how much water it takes, you know, how often they clean the troughs, how much water does they usually use. Now you can get a really accurate estimate of water intake. Mm-hmm. So if that changes and does it coincide with dry matter intake or does it start dropping off and then dry matter drops off?
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's an issue then that you sample the water and say, did the quality of the water come in here change? So I think it's just one more thing that the the dairyman's going to go, yep, one more thing you want me to look at, Reed. Well, it's pretty darn important to milk, which is 87% water.
So. Right. Yes. Yeah. I think we forget that a lot of times. Yeah. Yeah. We talk about all the, you know, energy that goes into milk and protein that goes into milk. Well, it's mostly water. Yeah.
Or if you want to look at it the other way, if you go to a place, you know, if we go over to Naglaris and watch them bake, you know, Spotted Cow, mm-hmm. you think the quality of the water and the quantity of water they put in when they're starting to make beer matters?
Oh,
darn right
yeah.
it does.
Yep.
And we're feeding a fermentation vat in a cow. And if we get the right kind of quality water in there, it's going to be healthy.
Yeah. I want to go back and talk some of the logistics about temperature a little bit more, too. You've mentioned a few times that the pre-fresh, post-fresh are your two important groups. A lot of times our dry cow barns are farther away from everything else, right? And so might not be as accessible to some of that plate cooler water and some of these other warmer water sources that you've mentioned. So what are some good ways that you've seen to maintain a good temperature of that water in dry cow barns?
Well, so if you're into those kinds of barns, more than likely those water sources are going to be heated. Mm-hmm. So that's going to help you until you get a lot of cows. But remember, in a dry cow barn, you typically don't get the you know, your cows are feeding and they're coming over to drink, but you don't get quite the prolactin-driven thirst that you get in lactating cows. Mm-hmm. So I think that the electric heaters or the heaters that are going to be in those tanks are going to, or water sources are going to help minimize some of the water temperature coming out of the ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's for us to worry about in the upper Midwest. Other places that, you know, it's not such a big deal if you're in Florida, but for here, it surely is.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you look, those kinds of dairies also have the problem that have a lot more of the algae and slime growth and it comes from some of the minerals, particularly if you have iron in those water sources that are really nasty in the South compared to what we see here.
Yeah.
But treating water is an important thing.
Yeah. I mean, you've convinced me. So
so now we got to, you know, how many cows do you milk? Okay.
Yep.
You understand it because you've got a background that says you've got a nutrition background mm-hmm. and you've had David Beatty as your, you know, monitoring your thesis probably.
Yeah.
You kind of got the water quality thing. Whether you liked it or not, he was going to tell you about it.
Yeah, that was a big part of our ruminant nutrition class for sure. Are there tools out there? Are there recommended resources that you have for dairy producers that are interested in learning more about some of these questions?
I guess I would investigate with chemical suppliers that, you know, typically all these dairies are got somebody that's selling them soap and acid and chemicals for the barn, pre-dips, post-dips. Many of those have systems where they can actually inject things into the water supply to help sanitize it. And, you know, again, I would often tell dairymen, let's do it on a couple of tanks and watch those tanks and see what happens. Do you see cleaner tanks from a point of view of the scum and the slime buildup in those compared to your other tanks? And if you do, it makes it easier to clean. It's going to be better for your cows. Now figure out how to do it on the rest of your dairy.
Yeah.
So it's a question of going out and actually looking for some information on water quality and then trying to put in some kind of a test mechanism on your dairy that says, does it make a difference on my farm? And if it does, then make it work.
Anything else that we forgot to talk about in terms of water while we kind of look at drawing to a close?
One of the best clients I ever worked with, I started working for him when I was a second year here in Hazel Green. He was a sophomore in high school and he was going to take over his dad's dairy. And anyway, at Joe's place, we did a lot of things over the years and fixed milking equipment. We lowered the pipeline and jackhammered the floor out one time. So the pipeline was the same height for the cows, but obviously the floor was sloping.
Mm-hmm.
So when I would palpate cows at the milk house end, the beam was over my head. The other end, the beam was here. And we did lots of things. We put a 2-inch water line in there. It takes a lot of hangers, a PVC line, put 3/4 lines to the water bowls. And he took a 5-gallon pail under the water bowl, scrubbed it with a hunk of baling mm-hmm. rope from a bale, scrubbed it out, threw a little bleach in there. That was 3 pounds of milk on that dairy.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, you could go there Christmas morning on an emergency call and the waters were clean. But his point was, it's the easiest thing I've ever done to make healthier cows.
Very good. If people want to know more about what you're working on, what you're doing, is there anywhere that they can go? Or is it... they just got to talk to you.
They got to talk to me. So they can find me. Okay.
All right.
And I do answer my email and I do answer my cell phone. So
it's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. DSM Firmenich. A healthy digestive tract is vital for calf health and performance. Digestirom calf from DSM Firmenich can boost absorption, immunity, and performance. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. SmaxTech. Get insights from inside your cows with SmaxTech for higher herd health and profitability. Evonik Animal Nutrition. We are sciencing the global food challenge. R Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Trow Nutrition North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science.
When your goal is to help animals reach their full potential, health matters. Diamond V offers a fresh perspective on animal health, a perspective that supports gut health, strengthens immunity, and ultimately enhances performance. For those who choose to invest in keeping healthy animals healthy, feeding Diamond V makes a statement about another dimension of profit, where margins are measured by confidence in your future. To get a fresh perspective, visit DiamondV.com, because animal health deserves a healthier approach.
All right, so we're going to jump in. To wrap this up, we're going to jump into our three questions that we ask all of our guests. So I hope you're prepared. Well, our first question is, what is your favorite dairy-related book or resource?
You know, there's quite a few of them, but to me, I look through, you know, I like to look through Hordes Dairyman as soon as I get it. I look at Journal of Dairy Science, and I try to follow the blips that come. Progressive Dairyman is another one that I look at. And because lots of times you'll see there'll be short articles on some research done somewhere. And what I always do is go find a paper or go find that person that did the research. So to me, sometimes there'll be things in those magazines and that I haven't seen yet. So then I go look, go get more detail if it interests me.
Well, and now Journal of Dairy Science is open access too. So
For years I paid for it. Now it's like, well, it's easy to get. Now,
No excuses.
And a lot of it, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there that a guy like me is not probably going to use. But on the other hand, almost every issue, there's a couple articles that I print off, you know, that I can use as a resource, or I can forward that on to a dairyman that I'm trying to make, convince them to make a change on a dairy. And that's basically been my career. It's like, how do I motivate people to make change that are better for cows?
All right. Our second question is, what is your favorite non-dairy related book or resource?
Oh man, I go through, you know, I find I don't read quite as much as I used to, but I still like Tom Clancy books.
Oh, I read a lot of those growing up. My mom's a big Tom Clancy fan. Yeah.
but that and going back and reading through my Bible again a few times, that's, you know, kind of keeps me going. So,
yeah. All right. And our last question is, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are not successful?
To me, if I look at the dairies, and I've had an opportunity to travel dairies all over the world, you know, everywhere. In the dairies that are most profitable, I'm not saying the highest production, but dairies that are profitable, because you could have a dairy. I had a guy with 35 cows, had a small cheesemaker making cheese, and he and his wife sold the cheese. Probably made more money per 100 than anybody I ever worked for.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the dairies that are highly profitable do the little things in their management program more correctly for more days. Mm. You know, they deal Avirex. Every dairy, if a dairy tells you they've never dumped any milk down the drain in the milk house, I always say they'll lie about other things too, because they probably made a mistake.
Yeah.
But it's those little things. It's the details. Like today, we're talking about the quality of water, or the quality of their feed pushups, or the way their consistency in handling cows to the parlor. Mm-hmm. It's the consistency of the art of prep. Those things are just more consistent on profitable dairies.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter the management plan. It could be to be really high production, or have a client that says, hey, I've got crossbred cows. I want really high components, and 65 to 70 pounds of milk is great. Mm-hmm. Fine. Do what you got to do to get that, and then do it right every day.
Yep.
It's little things.
I talk about death by 1,000 paper cuts sometimes.
Yeah. It's the same principle, you know. Yeah. But yeah, do the little things right more days than not. And there will be days when it doesn't work.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat today. It's been a really, really great conversation. And hope our listeners enjoyed it as much as I did.
Okay, someday we'll do another one on parlor performance or something.
Yeah, love that. Yes.
Or moving cows to the parlor or whatever.
There's a lot of things we could talk about. Yeah.
You bet.
Looking to elevate your brand and captivate audiences through the power of podcasting? Look no further. Introducing the custom podcast brought to you by Wisemetrics, where we take care of the behind the scenes so that you can focus on what truly matters. Podcasting has become an invaluable tool for brand awareness, but let's face it, putting it into practice can be a daunting task. It's incredibly time-consuming and requires technical know-how, but don't worry, we've got you covered. With our experienced team at the helm, we'll handle the operational aspects so you can channel your energy into what your company does best. Are you ready to unleash the podcasting potential of your company? Schedule a call with one of our specialists today at the link in the bottom of this episode. You'll also receive a free podcast strategy consult tailored to the unique needs and goals of your business.